Mark Twain said that the reports of my death are greatly exaggerated. And I'm here with the gambler, Jeff Gann, who I posted a very moving tribute to you because I heard that you had passed away. But this is not true because obviously you're here talking to us right now.
Correct.
So was there a miscommunication or a misidentification? What happened?
Misidentification.
Okay. So is there another gambler or is that what's going on?
To my knowledge, there was a gentleman by the name of Russell Stallings that was using the name Gambler. He's the one that passed away. You know, condolences to his family. You know, it's a sad thing, but I'm glad it wasn't me.
Are you getting report? Were you getting reports of people like asking your family if you were still alive and that sort of thing?
Well, my son Jeff, he had tried to call me early that morning because he woke up with so many tweets about my passing.
Right.
He called me. I was at work, had my phone laying on top of my toolbox. So then he calls me like six times, no answer. So he's pretty upset. So I call him back and I said, oh shit, something's wrong, you know? So when he hears my voice, he just breaks down and starts crying. I'm like, son, what's wrong? You know? And he was like, Dad, do you not know it's all over the internet that you died? And I said, oh, no, I didn't know. I said, hell, unless I'm dead and I don't know it.
Well, yeah, because I heard it too. And I wrote a nice tweet about how you had kind of helped me. You had a very integral part of my career. And then heard a couple of days later or a couple hours later that it was all a rumor and all a sham. So then a good friend of mine suggested, well, why don't you try and get him on Talk is Jericho so you can tell him face to face and actually have a conversation with him. And I thought, what a great idea. So so your misreported death led to this.
And it's great. Great seeing you, man. It's been a long time. And I appreciate all the kind words you've said about me. But, man, you did that on your own. I was grateful to have the match I had with you.
Well, it's funny because I'm going to look right here. It was August 23rd, 1996.
Right.
We're going to talk about your whole career, but let's just talk about this one story. So we were doing tapings, worldwide tapings in Orlando. And I had just had a match a few days prior, my first match in WCW with Jerry Lynn. And it just didn't work out. It just wasn't good. I had just come from Japan where I'd been working, you know, 20-minute matches and they give you 5 minutes and I didn't know what to do. And I had a really bad kind of cloud over my head because I came back from that match and Terry Taylor said, I heard you were supposed to be good. What was that? It was terrible. Now, when you're a young guy and you hear that, it just kind of crushes you and you kind of don't even really know what to do. So then I kind of like, and a lot of people are saying, well, what happened to this match? I heard that it wasn't very good. And so you better do good in this match today. And so they just happened to put me with the gambler, which is you. Do you even remember this?
Oh, yes. Oh, I do. Yeah. Terry Taylor actually came to me. He said, look here. I said, we like this kid. We want to sign him. I said, you know, I said, I need you to go out and have a good match with him, a good solid match. Still get yourself over like you always do. You know, find those little openings where you can get you something in, you know, make yourself look good. And I said, Tate, cut him off occasionally, see how he recovers. But said, we like this kid. We want him to have a good match. Just go out and have a good, solid match with him. And but get him over good. I said, okay, I'll do it. Because I knew that's what my job was.
Right.
It was a pleasure, man. I watched the match just the other day. That's probably the only second time I've ever seen it. But I watched it the other day. I said, wow. He didn't need me.
Well, it's funny, though, because and actually, I was going to surprise you. I want to do a watch along of that match with you. I have it pulled up right here and we can watch it together.
Yeah.
But just so you know, like I'd been wrestling for 6 years at that time. I'd been around the world, Japan and Mexico and all these places. That time I had really low self-esteem because I was in this was the big leagues. And I know, and you know too, you only get a couple chances to really make a first impression. And if you lose that confidence, you don't know what you're doing or where you're going or what to do next, right? So it was very integral to me and never having met you. And I think you led the match or I had a couple ideas. And it was just like, I'm just going to go out there and just have a match with the gambler. And not put any fancy bells and whistles, just have a fucking wrestling match. And that's what we did.
We really didn't really talk about much, best I remember. We didn't really talk about much. And we especially had a beginning, a middle, somewhere, and a finish, you know. You know, and it's one of the things I learned from Ole Anderson was act, react. And if you can do that, if you can act and react, you can have a good match. Mm-hmm. And that's what you've done. Every time I would touch you, I'd do a little something. Bam, you was right there with it again. You know, hell yeah, come on.
Well, I think I would love. It's 5 minutes long. Let's watch it together right now.
That sounds good.
We're gonna pull it up. You guys can find it on YouTube if you want. It's Chris Jericho versus the Gambler, and I'm gonna add this right now. I'm going to put this into full view here, and we're going to watch it together. This is from, once again, 1996, August of 96. I turned the sound down so you can't really hear it. We'll talk over it. So we used to show up at Universal here and do probably what 2 weeks of tapings, right, Jeff? And you'd wrestle once a day or twice a day or whatever it may be. And they would bring in the audience who would cheer when they were told to, and they would boo when they were told to. Very much a canned audience.
Right.
Yeah, so here comes the Gambler. He's got card tricks. Look at this. Throwing the cards out. It's like kind of like a riverboat gambler, right?
Well, that's what Pez Watley called me. You know, it's the riverboat gambler. That's what Pez Watley called me.
Oh, so it was a Pez Watley invention?
Yes, Pez Watley gave me the gambler name. He started calling me Jeff Gamble in the beginning. And that was all due to a road that I lived on, was Gamble Road. And he and I, we stopped at the end of a highway one day, and he was trying to come up with a name for me. And he's like, we'll call you Jeff Gans. And then he's like, no, you're Jeff Gamble. You know, and he said, but you are the Gambler.
Where was that? Was that in Texas somewhere, or where was that?
In Tennessee. I lived in Tennessee.
Gotcha. So then here comes the hot young upstart, Chris Jericho. Only my second match in WCW ever. And once again, not a lot of confidence, even though on the surface.
You look like you got all the confidence in the world to me.
Deep down inside, though, man, I was like, this has to be good. So, you know, well, Pee Wee Anderson's the referee, not with us anymore.
Right, yeah. I'm sad to hear that.
Nice little solid lockup. He'd give me the big knee, big forearm to the back here. Off the ropes. Oh, a little reversal. Oh, look at this. Nice.
Yeah, right on cue, man. Right on. You know.
But see, once again, that's a great call to put together the match. It's very simple. The babyface gets the steam at the beginning, and you're doing some nice bumps for me there.
Mm-hmm.
How long had you been working at this point, Jeff? It's 1996.
Okay, I've been with WCW since 1990.
Since 1990. Wow, so they knew exactly what they could trust you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Terry, I was at the power plant all the time, and Terry Taylor was there a lot. You know, Terry would always come to me, you know, at the TV table and said, hey, we need to get this guy over good. You know, I know you can do it. You know, so, you know, that was a little surprise right there with that elbow. I don't even think we talked about that, I don't think.
Yeah.
But look at you. You recover. I mean, you do your thing. And then when you get that opening, you're there.
It's funny, too, because that ring is so small. Like, when you look at it in comparison to like WWE rings or AEW rings, it's probably about a 60.
You see, that has an Ole Anderson knee.
Yeah, look at that. You got a little bit of Anderson in you there, a little Arn Anderson, Ole Anderson look there.
Yeah. See, Ole took me under his wing when I went to the power plant and worked with me.
Good muscle there. Your typical old school barrel chested heel there.
Right. Yeah.
But this is a good match, you know, already. You know, it gave me a little shine at the beginning and beat me down here. You know, it's exactly kind of what you were asked to do and exactly what I needed to kind of show that I could have a match. Because once again, coming from a place where you're wrestling 20 minutes a night and condensing that into five, there is sort of a psychology to it.
It's true. Very true. And I knew, see, like that second turnbuckle, that you would come up with something, you know, to cut me off, you know. And
right.
It was just act react, you know.
Yeah, you probably told me, you know, take over or whatever it was, and I did. You know, the dreaded atomic drop. That's good stuff, though, man.
You know, that clothesline, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, man, you were a breeze to work with. And I wish we could have had more matches together. But shortly right after that's when I had a shoulder injury and had to have shoulder surgery.
Okay. So I think this is the finisher. This is the big lion salt right there, little backflip thing.
Yeah, perfect. Right on.
Go to the top rope. Here comes the big drop kick, and there you go. So basically, in about 4 minutes, you helped me kind of revitalize my career. And you might think that, oh, yeah, it was just you. But, dude, seriously, that really made a big difference. So it was actually pretty fun to watch that with you.
That's cool. Hey, it's great watching it with you, man.
So you knew exactly what to do. You'd been working kind of doing these types of matches for years at that point in WCW then.
Yes, yes. I mean, I knew what my job was, you know. And my job was when I had good solid matches, get the stars over, and call it a day. And I enjoyed it. Man, I'm telling you, I enjoyed my days with WCW. It didn't bother me to go in there and put somebody over. It did not. I was getting excitement out of it myself.
Mm.
But, you know, I got to do with the wrestling. I didn't get to play sports in school. So that was my time out there. And I loved it, man. I mean, I didn't care that I had to go out there and put people. It was fun.
But that's what wrestling is, right? Like that was, if we were actors in a movie and your job was to get shot by the soldier in every war, you'd do it. And you, if you're a good actor and you do a good performance, who cares if you win or lose, right? Like you had a certain role to play on the team. And obviously, if they had an eye on me and knew that I came out of the gate stumbling, let's put him with the gambler. He's going to be great with this. That's a good position to be in.
Right, yeah. Well, Arn Anderson actually had told me that many times. He said, you can work with anybody. He said, that's a talent. He said, you can go out there and get anyone over. Now, Arn was like one of my idols.
Mm-hmm.
You know, always looked up to Arn, and Arn gave me advice along the way. It was a great compliment, that coming from him, that, hey, you can work with anybody. You know, we can trust you that you're going to get the job done no matter who you work with.
How did you end up in WCW in 1990?
Okay, I went down for a tryout. Then they started using me in the very beginning as Jeff Gamble. So then I ended up meeting Ole Anderson. He kind of took a liking to me after being around him for a little while, you know. But Ole was a tough guy. Yeah, and Ole would tell me something, I'd listen.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, at one time, I had long hair, and he told me to cut that shit off. He said, don't come back here on Monday with that shit. What did I do? Do you think I went back there on Monday with that long hair?
Because was Ole booking at the time?
Yes, and Ole was at the training camp working with his son, Bryant. And Bryant and I, we trained a good bit together. You know, so therefore, I was in the ring a lot with Ole. Ole was the one that little skit when Rick Rude was world champion as being one of the bodyguards with Rick Rude. And there was just a little short skit that was done.
Mm-hmm.
But Ole gave me that. I have to credit, man. I'm going to tell you what. I have to credit, and I've never told Ole this. I have to give him 100% credit for my days at WCW. He is the one that got me signed to a contract.
Mm.
He said, James, get you a contract ready. He said, get down there and sign it.
Nice.
You know, so I have to give Ole my credit for the days me at WCW. And I've never told him that. Since wrestling, I haven't really talked to anyone. You're really the first person I've ever talked to since wrestling. Well, now, I was in contact a little bit with Buff Bagwell when I had a little indie show after wrestling and Buff coming and worked for me some. But I've never told anybody that I credit Ole Anderson for my days at WCW. And I hope someday I can get the opportunity to tell him.
When you were at the, so when you mentioned the power plant, were you training there, like training other wrestlers there or just training there yourself or both?
Okay. I went in and started, you know, just training for myself. So then it developed where it's like I couldn't get enough. I was there every day, even when my training was, I was still there. Mm. And so I actually kind of fell into the category, me and Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker, of kind of being his under guy of bringing new guys in and helping them get them trained.
Hmm.
I kind of fell into that. So I wasn't like, per se, a trainer,
right.
But they would put me with certain guys to train them because I enjoyed it, man. I loved it.
So who were some of the guys that you helped train?
When Big Show come in, I was part of his training. When Big Show come in, I know his debut says something else, but if I ain't mistaken, his first match was at center stage, and I was the one to wrestle him his first match. And it was basically, he caught a boot, and I give him a boot, and chokeslam.
So how do you train a guy so big like Paul? Like at the time, he was, I don't know, 25 years old. He was probably 400 pounds, legit 7 feet tall. How do you start training a guy like that? And what kind of instructions were you given by the office?
You know, when he was at the training camp, I really, his size didn't bother me or anything. And he worked hard. Oh, he worked hard at the power plant. His size really didn't bother me or anything, but I remember being at center stage. And I was already in the ring, and the doors open, and the smoke's coming out, and he walks out. And that's when I was like, oh, shit, I'm glad I know this guy. But someone was on the front row, and they're like, Gambler, he's going to kill you. And that's when I thought, I said, damn, I'm glad I know him.
Once again, I guess when you're training somebody that big, it's probably, was it hard to teach him how to sell? Did he understand the concept of selling, considering how big he is? He probably never sold anything in his life.
I think Sarge worked with him more on the selling, but I think it's just something he just naturally developed.
Yeah.
I learned fast. I mean, he wasn't at the power plant very long. I mean, he was on TV, you know, for sure. He wasn't there long, but when he was there, he worked. There was nothing given to him. Sarge didn't give it to him.
Yeah.
I got along great with Sarge, too.
Well, Sarge was an ornery bastard, wasn't he? He wasn't having it either.
Yeah, unless you really got to know him. And he,
yeah.
You know, you could see a different side of him. You know, no, Sarge was a great guy. He was a great guy.
He was always a good guy to me, too. But you could tell as a trainer, he was probably pretty hard-nosed.
He was hardcore when it comes to that training. Yes, he was.
Who else did you train besides Paul that came out of the power plant?
Mr. Olympian, Chip Minton, which he was a, you know, he just kind of stayed more in the jobber status also.
Right.
I can't really think of like stars, you know, Craig Pittman come out there, Ice Train, worked a lot with Ice Train, loved that guy, you know, men train, you know, I got along great with Train. I mean, I just can't really think right off the top of my mind, you know, any guys that like really made it in, you know, as stars.
Sure.
Like major stars. You know, trained with a lot of guys there and enjoyed it. And it was a blast.
So tell me about some of the guys that you worked with, because WCW at that time frame, especially when you get to like 95, 96, 97, it was an all-star cast of some of the greatest wrestlers in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, you go from the cruiserweights to the heavyweights to everyone in between. There was probably one of the greatest rosters of all time.
Yeah. Buff Bagwell, loved working with Buff.
Yeah.
Johnny B. Badd, loved working with Johnny B. Badd. It was, you know, those guys were great to work with. Sting and Luger. Sting would come to me and he'd say, hey, it's me and you, Gambler. I said, okay, cool. He said, just want to call it in the ring. I said, yes, I will meet. And usually the matches you've seen that me and Sting done was just act, react. Same thing with Luger. Same thing. Just easy guys to work with. I don't have no complaints or nothing bad to say about anybody, really.
It's interesting that it's such a lost art nowadays, Jeff. Like, obviously, I started in 1990 myself. So that was the way you would do it. You'd go over one or two things and then basically just call it all in the ring. Or if it was a house show, you wouldn't even go over anything. You just walk out there and see what happens. It's such a lost art. There'd be so many kids in the wrestling business today.
If you notice that match between you and I, neither one of us were talking.
No, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-uh. Ole Anderson had a thing about, don't want to see you talk in the ring. I don't want to see you back him into the ropes and talk into his. I don't want to see that. I want you act and react. That's what I want to see.
Hmm.
And he said, if you're a professional and you don't know how to do it, you can make it happen. You can have a damn good match by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I guess that's just some of the old school stuff, you know. Loved Ole, man. I loved Ole.
Got any Ole stories? Because he was kind of a crotchety guy, too, at times.
No, Ole was just tough at that training camp. He was, hey, I'm going to tell you what, you didn't get smart with Ole. Ole would knock your dick in the dirt. Ole was just a straight, Ole shot straight with me. Ole didn't bullshit me, you know. He just, you know, he told me, you know, cut your hair, I cut my hair.
Right.
Then when I come back, my haircut, he's like, that's what I thought. You had that look.
Mm-hmm.
But he never told me what look. You know, I was just assuming it was that Anderson look, you know.
Right,
you know,
right, right.
The redness and the hair and the receding hairline and that. You know, but he never said you had the Anderson look. He said, that's what I thought. You got that look.
What were some of the biggest matches you ever had in WCW?
Not really any big matches, no pay-per-views, no nitros.
Okay.
Not any of that. It's just mostly the Saturday morning, the Sunday Worldwide. So that was basically the programs they worked me on.
Well, you mentioned working with Sting and Luger and those types of guys. Those are always big matches too, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would consider those big matches. And Hacksaw Jim Duggan, man, love that guy.
How could you not, right? Yeah.
Working with Hacksaw was a night off too, you know.
Did you ever win a match in WCW?
I think just very few. I think me and Scott Studd, I think they put me over on Scott Studd once. It was a couple of the matches I went over on. But it was very few, Chris.
That's all right, though.
But and that was okay, man. I was getting to live out my dream, man, doing what I was doing. And if you don't mind, I'll go into that. Just me and my grandpa, I used to watch wrestling with my grandpa. You know, and hell, I'd get up in the living room floor, and he's like, calm down, Woodrow. He called me Woodrow. He's like, calm down, Woodrow. We're going to miss it, you know. But my grandpa was a big wrestling fan. So then when he passed away in 77, you know, I kind of pulled away from it a little bit. Didn't really get to watch much wrestling, or I didn't watch much wrestling after that. And the Minnesota Wrecking Crew was his team, my grandfather's team. I mean, it was everything Minnesota Wrecking Crew. And one thing he always said about Ole, I remember he'd say this about every time Ole was in a match. It's like, you know, he's like a big old oak tree. You better have a sharp saw or a big saw if you're going to cut him down.
where did you grow up at?
Birchwood, Tennessee.
Where's that near? Memphis?
North of Chattanooga.
Gotcha. So you watched it with your grandfather. And then, so when did you decide that this is something you wanted to do for a living?
It's just kind of crazy how everything really happened, Chris. You know, my grandfather passed away, and then I wasn't really watching wrestling that much. And my father had a salvage yard, a junkyard. And there was this guy come up, and he took windows, and door glasses, windshield, back glasses out of these cars. Well, his uncle had a window shop, automotive window shop. And his uncle was J.D. Kyle, which I think Dr. Hook's what they called him. He wrestled. And my dad one day told this kid, he's like, man, you said, you're a big kid, you know. And he's like, oh, yeah, so I'm a wrestler. My dad's like, oh, really? He said, well, I'll bring you some tickets next time. Mm-hmm. Well, he brought us tickets. We go to Memorial Auditorium where Harry Thornton's putting on a show. Who was it? It was Terry Gordy.
Wow.
Bam, bam. So. When I finally crossed paths with him, you know, once I got into the wrestling business, I told him, he's like, oh my, he said, that's you? I mean, it's just crazy, man, how that happened, you know? So then me and Terry, we'd see each other out at different clubs and all that stuff and, you know, communicate and become somewhat social friends. We didn't really hang out a lot, but, you know, when we seen it, one another, we're social and he had introduced me and all that stuff, you know. So that was just crazy that we go down and it's Terry Gordy.
Oh, totally. Yeah, for sure.
They're taking those windshields and those glasses out for his uncle's glass company. That's crazy. Yeah.
Great relationship to have right out of the gate, for sure. Yeah.
But how I got into wrestling was got married, graduated high school, all that. And then I went to work at I was a welder at Century Record. We built a Century Records. And there was a guy there said, we was talking about wrestling one time, and he's like, well, I know a guy that is a wrestler, and he trains people. And I was like, oh, really? I said, I'd be interested in doing that, which I wasn't a big guy. You know, I was a skinny guy, you know. He said, yeah. So he introduced me to this guy, and this guy, I think he charged me $900, I think, because I was interested in it. And he taught me the basics. He taught me the basics, how to fall, hit the ropes, and all that. And his name was Richie Dye. He was out of Ringo, Georgia, if I recall. So he taught me the basics, and then I went from there. So I just started going to different independent circuits, and then there was an independent show opened up in Cleveland, Tennessee. So I go out there. I meet Pez Watley. You know, they had guys like Mr. Wrestling 2 on the card, and Pez, and Buddy Landell. And so I met Pez, you know, just started talking, communicating with Pez, you know. So I was showing him some wrestling pictures, and he said, what do you think a promoter would do with these if a promoter, you sent these to a promoter? I said, I don't know. So he finds a damn garbage can. He puts them in a garbage can. He said, that shit's going to go in the garbage. I love it. Pez was a straight shooter with me, man. He said, that shit's going to go in the garbage. He said, you've been taught the basics, and whoever taught you that done a good job. You know how to run the ropes. And he said, you know how to take the bumps and all that. But see, you need to start working out. He said, you need to put on some muscle. And said, you need to train with me for a little bit. I started training with Pez, and it was very little he charged me, you know. So then me and him started traveling the roads together, doing independence. And it was just trained with Buddy Landale for a little bit, you know, while I was there in the Cleveland area, you know. But Pez was like a second father to me. Mm-hmm. He gave me good advice on the road, and I miss old Pez. I miss him.
You know, yeah.
It was some fun times traveling with Pez and learning from him. And then when I ended up going to WCW for a tryout, who comes down there and gets a job as a trainer? It's Pez. But, you know, so that was just a funny thing. You know, when Pez, you know, I was always driving. You know, I was always driving. He's a veteran, and I'm driving, you know. And he'd book a double show. You know, he'd book a double show. We might be in Athens, Tennessee, doing a show, and then all of a sudden I had to book it over to somewhere, you know, on the other side of Chattanooga, you know, for him to do the other show. You know, be up and down I-75 driving like crazy. I enjoyed those days the best. Yeah, sure did.
So you basically got into WCW very early on in your career then. It's not like you had jumped around different territories.
I did. I really don't know how I got there that fast, Chris. You know, like my son told me, he said, Dad said it was just like you were welding. And then next thing you know, you're working for one of the largest companies in the world, you know? And I said, yeah. I said, I don't know how that happened. I wasn't a very good politicker. Sometimes I'd say shit I shouldn't say, you know, and I wish I'd been a little more politically correct on things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't, you know, and I think you can't go back and change it, you know. I might could have went further, Chris, if I would have done that. And that's what Pez told me. He said, it's not ass-kissing. It's not ass-kissing. He said, it's politics. You know, you got to get in there with the politics really too. But I didn't really have the communicational skills to get in there with those guys and try to politics either, because I'd get irritated and get pissed off with it.
How did you see WCW grow? Because you mentioned you got there at 90, and then by 96, suddenly it's the top of the top. So kind of tell us the changes that you noticed. What was it like when you got there, and when did you start seeing things start to build?
Yes, started seeing it build. And, you know, and I actually started becoming a better wrestler the more I worked, started seeing the changes. And then the production, I was just like, wow, to start with. But then over the years, you could actually see some of the production change too, you know, the bigger production trucks, and it seemed like, you know, we were going to bigger venues. It just seemed like everything just grew fast.
Because I remember, like, you know, I lived in Knoxville at the time. I was working for Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and to see, I remember they used to send us tickets in the mail with the power bill, like free tickets. If you want to come see WCW, fast forward a year and a half, and suddenly it's stadiums, and then NWO was there and all that sort of thing. Did that affect you at all as far as your career, the money you're making? Were you working more? Were you working less?
Actually, I think I was working more during that time. I think, you know, when I wasn't working, you know, B towns, you know, on the road doing these shows, it seemed like the TV programs were still pretty steady.
Right.
You know, it seemed like about pretty much every Saturday morning show or Saturday night or the Sunday worldwide show, it seemed like I had a little spot on there somewhere, you know.
Another great thing too about that time is like, there would be, I don't know, 150 wrestlers in Orlando. We'd all stay like close to Disney or whatever it may be. And then going out at night was always a blast, going to downtown Disney and all that. Did you go, who did you hang out with outside of the ring?
Do you remember Max Muscle?
Mm-hmm.
See, me and Max Muscle were buddies and traveled together everywhere, you know. So usually it was me and Max out somewhere, you know. You know, and then naturally we'd see some of the other guys, you know, out, and everything was cool, you know. But mostly me and Max hung out most.
That guy was massive. It was aptly named Max Muscle.
He was a good guy.
Did you work in other territories as well? Because I think it seemed like there was a break in between your WCW stint, and then you left for a while and then came back. Or were you just out on loan? Like, where else did you work at?
When I got a shoulder injury, they had some sort of talent agreement with USWA. So right after a shoulder surgery, I got sent to USWA.
And that was Lawler's. That was Lawler's territory, right?
Yes, Lawler and Jerry.
Yeah.
So they put the tag belts on me and Brickhouse Brown, but that was only just for a minute, and then put them right back over on the PG-13. I was up there probably 9 months, I guess, something like that. you know, until I was healing up and perfecting my craft a little more. And then they brought me back to WCW.
How was it working in Memphis and for Lawler? Like, tell us kind of what the schedule was at that point in time. How often were you working and that sort of an idea?
If I remember correctly, it was like Memphis on Monday night, then Louisville, Kentucky, I think, on Tuesday, and then like Wednesday, Evansville, Indiana. You know, and I think it was hit or miss where we'd be at on, but usually it was, I'd be home on Sundays. I'd leave out and do the show on Monday and we'd get back home until Sunday. Driving a lot, lots of driving.
Yeah, it's a tough territory, right? To work 6 days a week driving all around.
Right, yes. I was getting paid what little money I was making through USWA, but I was still under contract with WCW, still getting that money as well.
Oh, so that's okay then. So they were still protecting you. They just sent you down there as kind of a change of scenery.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
I enjoyed my time at USWA. You know, worked with Scott Studd a lot. And then Scott Studd got his break, went back to WCW with Marcus. And when I come back to WCW, then, you know, I got to work with Scott some more. Scott was a blast to work with. He's easy to work with. It just... part of working, you know, just to, but you have to enjoy it, and I enjoyed it. I really did. Sometimes I wish I could have got some longer matches. You know, sometimes I wish I maybe could have got a little more of a push, but, you know, hey, Chris, I'm happy with what I got. Mm-hmm. It was a blast for me to get to do that.
But how long did you stay in WCW for? When did you finally leave?
99 was my last year.
I mean, that's a 9-year run with a major wrestling company. That's pretty, that's pretty rare, man.
Right, yeah. I've always appreciated the guidance that Owen would give me, you know, the things he would suggest to me. It was an honor when Eric Bischoff actually picked me to do that little MGM skit with Marcus Bagwell.
What was that one?
It was to where they involved a kid as a referee, a timekeeper, bell, you know, the ring the bell. And it was basically like a little skit where I tied everyone up in the back and I went out and I was kind of doing the characters. I was like, whoa, now hold on, now Marcus Bagwell, I was in the back in a card game, you know. hey, I'm out here now and I'm going to kick that butt for you, boy. You know, it's kind of that skit, you know. So then, you know, I keep trying to get out of the match and then Teddy Long comes out. I was like, whoa, now hold on, now Teddy Long, I know you ain't getting out here in my business. I kind of used that Pez Watley character there, you know.
Yeah.
Man, it's a nice bridge you got on. You know, so then I pulled 20 out, try to bribe him to hit the kid, somebody on the front row, you know. So it was just a little 4 or 5 minute little skit that we did like 6 times a day. And I think that was in the month of June or July at MGM. I had a blast doing that. So after I did that, but here's the thing, Chris, when they give us the script to read, I was damn nervous and, you know, my reading skills wasn't great anyway. You know, so I get the script and the words are running together. Hell, I couldn't even read my damn lines. You know, so we took a break and I told Eric, I said, let me, Dallas Page told me, said, now, if you ain't able to pull this off, you're probably going to be let go. Okay. And studied it. I studied it all night long in front of a damn mirror with a brush, you know, kind of doing my character and all that shit, you know, blew it out of water. Everyone told me, said you're still in the show from Marcus. And, you know, which Marcus was going over in the bank, like everybody told me, said you're still on the show. So after it was all over, and this was a great compliment coming from Eric Bischoff. He pulls a chair up in front of me. He said, I just want to thank you for what a great job you did with that. I said, okay. I said, I appreciate it. He said, let me tell you this. He said, when you've impressed my wife, and she's hard to impress, said she asked if we had sent you for acting classes.
Wow.
And I told her, no, that was just all you. And he said, when you've done that, you've done something. And said, thank you for doing such a great job with it. And that was an honor. That was an honor to get to do that. I've always loved acting. I've always loved it. And that might be the reason that my son's, you know, into the acting world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always been a part of life that I've liked and enjoyed.
So you mentioned before that you were the bodyguard of Rick Rude. What exactly did that entail, and what was your relationship with Rick like?
It was when Rick Rude had stolen the belt from Dustin Rhodes. They were looking for 2 bodyguards to go to the ring with him. And Ole picked me to do that. And then this other guy, I think his name was John Cap, So him being the top, he was taller than me, this guy John was, so they picked me to get in the ring, open the briefcase up while Rick put the belt in the briefcase, and then we stood at ringside while he wrestled Dustin. And that, it was just only a few times we did that. It didn't last long. And, you know, Rude was just like, you know, you ought to stand to the side of me. I interview you. You don't say a damn word. I do all the talking. but hell, we knew what our job was, you know,
and sure,
just did it to the best of our ability. Yeah. You know? So, but Ole picked me for that. And I remember when, you know, he sent me to the office and then he come in and told Black Jack Mulligan, he said, this is our guy right here. You know, why he picked me, I have no idea. You know, and then I got put into a little skit with when Kevin Nash was doing Vinny Vegas. I was like a hitman bodyguard slash something right there. And that was only just a few times as well. And then Vinny ended up taking the money from me and then beat me up or something. You know, it was just a little short-lived little skit they done. You know, so evidently, I don't know if it wasn't getting over or why they canned it. Maybe they found a better run with something else. Who knows, you know?
It's interesting, like back in the old days, the territory days, when you were somewhere for a long time and a new booker came in, sometimes it would affect whatever push that you have. And you mentioned you started with Ole. And then was the next booker after that Kevin Sullivan?
Yes.
So did that kind of affect kind of the work that you were doing?
No, actually, I got along great with Kevin. It seemed like, you know, I didn't hang out with Kevin or anything, but when we seen each other and spoke, you know, I got along great with Kevin. And I don't know why. Yeah, you know, I mean, why? But it didn't interfere. I mean, which I wasn't getting no kind of push or anything. I was just that guy that was on the card to do his job and make everybody look good.
So what finally happened in 99 that led to you leaving WCW?
My contract was up. And so I went home and I started building a house. And while I was in the process of building my house, I get a phone call from J.J. Dillon. So I answered the phone and he said, Gambler. And I said, yeah. He said, it's James J. Dillon. And he said, you ready to come back to work? And I said, whoa. I said, well, right now I'm in the process of building a house. And he said, well, we can get you a ticket in the mail. And I said, well, I'm in the process of building a house. I said, this is an open invitation. I said, once I'm finished with my house, can I give you a call? He said, give us a call. Have a good day. That was basically it. And I never called. You know, things happen. You know, I had to, you know, work and make money. And then, you know, kind of my marriage kind of fell apart. And then the whole deal with WCW going through all of its changes. I knew that I would get washed out or, lost in the mix, you know, so I just knew that was a waste at that point, you know, and hell, I just disappeared.
Did you ever work any indies at all or anything like that, or was that the end of it?
I opened one little indie show of my own, and like I said, prior when we was talking, I used Buff a few times on an indie show, and I think Disco Inferno maybe once or twice, you know, and that was short-lived too. That was short-lived also because it was right there around 9/11, when 9/11 occurred, it was tough on anything that was happening. So I ended up closing the doors on that, and then never went done anything else.
And that was it. That's interesting that most guys don't just walk away from the business on their own terms.
Yeah, did I want to do it more? Yes. Mm. I mean, yes, I did, but I just didn't feel like there was no place for me right there at that time. And then, you know, each year goes by and time goes by. And, you know, it's just like, hell, there was even people out on YouTube wondering where I went, you know, searching for the Gambler. Where did he go? He just disappeared, you know. and so I never did anything on social media with my wrestling. And, you know, because it was just something that I did that I enjoyed. And I just wanted to keep it to myself, I guess, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah, so I don't know. I just disappeared after 99. And then I wind up dead, and here I am.
And what do you do now, Jeff?
I do auto body collision. Now, I did auto body and fabrication and welding before I got into wrestling. So after wrestling, then, you know, that's what I went back to. You know, I went back to what I know. And, you know, buying, selling cars and auto collision and fabricating. You know, so that's what I grew up and learned how to do, and so I went back to it.
last couple of questions for you. Is there a favorite road story that you had where something crazy happened? Because it always was the case when we're on the road somewhere, something would go down. Is there something that stands out for you?
Yeah, I'm afraid if I went to tell, I'd probably tell on somebody. I might be telling something I shouldn't tell, you know? not really, you know. I can't think of anything right off the top of my head that was a crazy thing. Well, one thing, I'll tell this because it ain't nothing to get anybody to eat, you know. We was on a little show one time, and I think it was a Harley race, and Vader, I think, was in a town car. And then it was me and Max was in one, and Mark Starr and someone was with him. I think it was Terry Taylor was someone. I think there was like four of us town cars going through this little town somewhere up in Virginia. I'm talking about, we're just wide open. We're trying to stay up with Harley. Harley's just, I mean, he's a maniac behind that wheel, you know, in and out of those damn curves. Hell, we almost run somebody off the road. We almost run off the road. Max was driving, you know, so, and he done a great job driving. You know, we didn't wreck or anything, but Harley took us through those damn curves on that road. I'm talking about this wide open. Yeah, I know it had to be crazy. It had to be crazy to these people seeing, you know, four of these town cars just running bumper to bumper coming through their little town, you know. So, you know, that story there, you know.
Old school driving, right?
I'm going to tell you what, that Harley, I've heard stories about him, but I witnessed that one now. Yeah, I witnessed that one right there.
A last question for you, Jeff. What's your favorite match that you ever had? Is there one that stands out for you?
Well, Chris, I guess I would have to say it's a match you and I had. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, you give me more credit on that than what I deserve, you know. You know, I was just doing my job, man.
Yeah.
But, no, that match really, when I seen it again, I was like, oh, that was a damn good match. You know, yeah. For two people that didn't know each other to get in the ring and just basically call it in the ring is basically what we've done it, you know, and just act and react. And I was very proud of that match with you.
Yeah, me too, man. And once again, like I said, you say that I'm giving you too much credit, but for at that point in time, I really needed to have a good, solid match. And well, good.
I'm glad I could do it.
Yeah, so I always wanted to be able to say that to you in person, and thankfully I got to do it.
Well, you remember now, you come to the locker room. You come to the locker room, and I think I was getting my boots off, and you come in and you thank me. You did. You said thank you. You said you got me signed to WCW. If I ain't mistaken, that was your words. And you said, if I can ever do anything for you, you let me know. Am I correct on that?
I don't really remember, but I do remember I was really happy with it and really felt indebted to you. So I'm sure I say thank you to everybody, but I'm sure I gave you an extra special thank you.
Yeah, you did. You come in and you thank me, and best I recall is like, if I can do anything for you, let me know, you know, and it was an honor for me to have a good match with somebody. That was, you know, thank you.
Well, and that's the thing. I'd been wrestling for 6 years at the time. I knew the difference between a good match and a bad match. And you have that feeling where like, okay, we nailed it. So once again, man, I'm glad I got to tell you that in person and not after your supposed death.
Right. Well, my son had already told me that you had put it in your autobiography.
Yes.
That it was in there. And then I seen something on the net about it. You know, so I had already read that, you know, once when I was like, oh, shit, man, he's giving me more credit than I deserve.
Well, to me, it means a lot, man. I'm glad we got to see each other for probably the first time in 25 years or whatever it may be. So,
correct, yeah. Man. Now, we were going to get to see each other when you were going to come to Chattanooga with your Fozzie.
Right. Yeah, and, yeah.
Because you was going to put me on the guest list because my son had contacted you.
Yeah, yeah.
So we was going to get to see each other then, but then that venue got shut down. It was right at the time of the pandemic and all that. So I'd love to come to one of your shows, dude. I'd love it. I mean,
I think we're around Chattanooga at some point. I'll let you know. Anytime that we're around Chattanooga, I'll shoot you a text. We can say hi in person.
Judas. Your song Judas, man, that kicks ass.
Awesome, man.
You don't know. You don't know how many times I've listened to that song, you know? So great job on that.
Well, I appreciate it, man. And always remember that you had a big integral role in my career. So once again, thank you, Jeff. And it's great talking to you. And I'm glad you're alive.
All right. Thank you, Chris. It's great talking with you.
All right, Matt. I'll see you soon. Cheers, man.
Okay. All right. You have a good one.
You too, buddy. Thanks, Jeff.